This is the Andy Social Podcast. My name is Andy, and welcome back to another week of podcasting fun. This week's guest is with Adam Aguirre. Now, Adam is the frontman of Canberra/Melbourne band The Levitation Hex. And for many of you listening to the podcast, Adam will also be known as the frontman of legendary Australian metal band Alchemist. Now, just recently, a few weeks ago, I caught up with Adam in a bar in Canberra, and we had a couple of beers and shot the shit for an hour or so. Adam is a bit of a beer brewer, and in addition to playing in the Levitation Hex, he also has a couple of other projects, including a 70s-styled space band called Pilots of Baalbek, and he's in a tribute band to Turbo Negro called Turbo Belco as well. And Adam fancies himself as a bit of a beer brewer, so we chat about beer brewing as well as the bands that he's in. We talk about Alchemist a little bit, but only as a bit of a reference point to gauge where Adam is now and to really understand how much the industry's changed and technology has changed. And there's a lot more, I guess, control over creative input now as opposed to years gone by. There's a lot more that you can do. It's a lot easier to be able to produce content, and we talk a lot about it. It's really, really cool to get some insight from Adam and perspective for somebody who, in my opinion, as much as Adam would hate me to say it, is a legend in the Australian music scene and somebody that I've certainly taken advantage of using the podcast as leverage to have a really, really good chat with Adam. And I'm extremely excited to present this this episode to you all, and I will not crap on any further, but please enjoy this episode with Adam from the Levitation Hex and formerly of Alchemist. So we're at, was it Debacle?
Yeah, you're at Debacle. You're at the hipster part of town, which is impossible to find a park, but they usually got good beer, and I like beer, so.
Well, me too. Yeah. So kindred spirits.
Yeah.
Well, it's your recommendation, and I'm pretty chuffed with it, because I went past the front of the place and went, ooh, it's a restaurant? Oh, okay. How fancy are we going to get? Your tastes are quite fine. And yeah. I walked in and went, awesome. Plenty of beer taps.
Yeah.
Some nice beers.
That's the way, mate, you know. Like I said, apart from the parking, you can always get a good beer here. So, it's pretty central.
Yeah.
You know, it's the way to go. I would have had you around at our Patton studio and stuff, but I led you astray anyhow, mate. I ran out of Hefeweizen last night.
So. Oh, right. So you've got a full setup at your place.
Yeah, look, we've done the last two albums there.
Yep.
And it's a work in progress. I've basically got a an old Mac Pro running Pro Tools HD. I've got one 192 interface and 296 interfaces. A shitload of analog outboard gear that Ben and I have, Ben Hocking, drummer in Levitation Hex, have been acquiring, which is, I think, going to make the next mixes outstanding. We're really noticing a difference with it.
Yeah, cool.
And Ben is absolutely obsessed by it, and I need to distance myself from him that far, because I've got plans to travel next year, so I... spending all my paycheck on analog gear is expensive, you know.
Big money.
But
big.
Yeah, look, we rehearsed there, and it's good. I probably spent $5,000 or $6,000 about 10 years ago doing it up, basically. So at that stage, Alchemists were away from prying eyes, prying ears, I should say, when we were trying to write music, you know. And it's had about 5 different incarnations, you know, where I've redesigned and stuff. So, you know, Control 24 desk, and got my eyes on an SSL matrix. That's the next thing. Yeah. See, no kids, Andy.
Yeah, that's the key.
That's the key.
Yeah, we're definitely...
And a musician wife helps as well.
Yeah, so, absolutely. A bit of backing there.
Yeah.
Goes a long way. Yeah. Have you always been sort of that, not DIY, but self-sufficient when it comes to sort of production, and or has it been sort of in the later years where you've sort of picked it up and it's been more affordable and easier to do?
Definitely, I'm behind the wave.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
And you pick stuff up cheaper.
Yeah, absolutely.
When studios are going broke,
yeah.
I'm right there, like a seagull.
All right. For the chips.
Yeah, that's right. And I find, you know, the digital realm is the digital realm. It doesn't really matter. I had fallen into that trap of upgrading my software every time something came out. Now I'm on Pro Tools 8.5, and that's where I'm staying until the machine dies. And
yep. You get your sweet spot.
Yeah, yep. You're like, it sounds no different than Pro Tools 12. Yep. It may operate a little bit differently, but I've found that fantastic over the last 5 years to get the material I want. I haven't always been DIY. I guess the reason, the way I moved towards it is that I hated being under the pump in the studio when we were on budgets from Relapse and whatever label we're on at the time, and the vocalist always got the raw end of the deal, doing their shit last, and it's nothing against the other guys. They wanted their stuff top notch, but you squeeze into a little corner at the end, and sometimes my behaviour was very questionable and how I dealt with it. So I decided, well, rather than taking it out on my bandmates, I'm going to put myself in a position where I can track my stuff at home first. Yeah. And we tracked all of the last two Alchemist albums at home, but mixed it elsewhere. Yeah. And suddenly with Levitation Hex, that we're doing the...
So it was like this transition.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah. And I found that I actually really enjoy the recording process when I'm not under the pump.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And then when you don't have those, I'm sure like earlier on when you were in studios, that high cost and the time, like you just mentioned before, being like the last person to go in, there's limited time left because everyone's potentially gone over their allocated time.
Yeah.
There's so much extra pressure there, money-wise and time, to get the job done.
Yeah, it is. And I don't think I'm the only person who experienced that, but I guess I just manifested my life from that point onwards to be able to do it myself. And now I've got top class facilities between Ben and I.
Yeah.
My facility's not very good to record drums, and we've struggled with that. But Ben is living out in a farm just outside of the north side now, and he recorded actually drums for the latest Alarum album.
Right, okay.
With his gear, and it sounds amazing.
He's
so
a machine these days. He's doing a lot.
Yeah, he does, and I've been blessed in my life to be in bands with very musical and creative drummers, and I love to write riffs to beats.
Yeah, cool.
All right, so I had a great relationship with Rod Holder from Alchemist. Ben Hocking is very similar in his approach.
Yep.
He's songwriting minded, and he's 30 years old. He's probably more open-minded than I am.
Yeah.
I've found as I've got older, I've become more selective.
Yeah.
Is the way I like to do it.
You've seen a lot more and you've dealt with a lot more
shit. Yeah, yeah.
So,
but, you know, he will listen to stuff that I can't stand, and, you can't take that away from youth, you know. And I also can't put myself in the head of a 20-year-old. It's I'd want to kill myself.
But I guess there's probably good things. He can give a different perspective to something. So he listens to something you might not like, but he might be able to pull one little thing out of that and say, let's try this. And it blends in with whatever that whole vision that you have for Levitation Hex.
Yeah.
And it could add this whole new dynamic that makes the band even better than what it was before.
Yeah, well, he's definitely turned me on to a lot of good music. And I'm in the... The two albums we've put out have been a slow departure from my previous songwriting style, so they were definitely had an alchemist-y taste to them. Not so much the last one, but definitely the first one, and now you'd be struggling to find it.
So where is it now? What do you think it is?
How do I not sound like a dick and describe it? So it's very... I think it's metal, but to kids these days they'd probably call it rock music.
Yeah, okay.
I had the idea that I wanted to write music that I thought was beautiful.
Yep.
So I'm not screaming, it's all melodic.
Yep.
And I found where I used to hate my voice, that I'm really starting to enjoy it, and it's a part of what I do that I really like. I've also approached the songwriting, instead of writing a song and thinking about vocals later, I'll write a section of music, and before I move on, I'll write a melody over the top of it. So the vocal is leading into the next part. And it was really just quite a wake up to me. It's like, holy shit, I can actually really write cohesive songs, sort of under these guidelines.
It's weird for me to hear you say that you never liked your voice.
I really liked listening back to the high-pitched screams that I did when I was a younger man and was able to pull them out of my ass, you know. I would struggle to get one down in a set that I'm pleased with. And listening back, you can just tell that I've worn that part of my throat out, you know. I actually don't think that's anything rare for vocalists not to like their voices, but what I'm doing melodically now, I'm finding, I'm actually not a bad singer. So that's where I'm sort of taking this music. I've got a really supportive band. So they're happy for me to go, hey guys, look, you know, this is pretty much a song. It's a skeleton. You haven't put your stamp on it yet, but this is sort of where I'm going. And that's always nervous handing them the CD, but they're like, okay, man, like, love it. We don't know what it's going to do for us, but had we had commercial success with our first two albums, I guess I would be thinking about it differently.
Yeah, of course. Naturally.
You know, I'd be going, well, how can I keep the fan base pleased?
That's right.
And it's not that I want to piss off our small fan base that we have now. It's just I don't want to confine myself creatively.
That's it. You want to do things on your own terms.
Yeah.
Things that make sense for you. Otherwise, there's no longevity. You'll get over it. You'll hate what you do.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. Is that sort of approach been what the philosophy is for Levitation Hex when you guys got together? Was it a case of you all came from different bands and bands that had done reasonably well over the years and good reputation and all come in with different styles and different influences? Was it a case of let's all be open-minded and just see what comes together from a bit of a melting pot point of view, or do you already have a vision in mind?
Okay. I promised that I wasn't going to talk about Alchemist, but it makes it... I have to refer to the past to put it in context. So the split was for me, really emotional and really, really tough, and it was basically me walking away from it.
Yeah.
All right? I won't go into why, because I have respect for the other members. There was certainly a lot of tension, and we're all friends now, and it would have just been, as far as I'm concerned, a complete waste of time if we weren't. All right, so I'm more into protecting those friendships now than trying to be in a creative and performance situation with guys you don't get along with in those situations. You did for 25 years and then things change.
Absolutely.
So when I left, I went, I won't ever do music again. I was completely heartbroken. And that lasted 2 weeks. I just started writing music downstairs, and I guess if you listen to that first album, it's very adamantious. It's in the Alchemist era, I was still very much in that headspace. So I wrote an album, and I figured I'm really shit at bass. My favourite bass player was Mark Palfreyman, and I asked him, and he went, "Yeah, man, I'll put tracks down, and I'll try some vocals as well." And we did that, and then I was just going to release the album and see how it went. But he's like, "Oh, we got to start a band." And I was like, "Well, mate, I've been in the same band 25 years. I know a lot of people, but I don't know how to go about it. I really don't." So he got Scott Young, who was ex Alarum at that stage and is now back in. And amazing player. he contributed, and he also got Ben on site. And, you know, it's just like the two of us in Canberra and the two of us in Melbourne, we played a click. So as long as we've got the songs tight together, when we come together, we're tight.
Yeah,
sounds and good. We generally meet up in Albury and rehearse before a run of shows.
Meet halfway?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, there was sort of this just that I just felt a need to be creative. And the second album, Cohesion, it was like, guys, I want your input. Hmm. So riffs were thrown at me and beats and all that sort of stuff. And we created the album that way. And this next sort of stage of the band, it's different again.
Yeah.
All right. It's I've sort of taken the reins. Not that I want control, but I just have all this to get out, and it's coming out good. So, like I said, very supportive band members.
That's cool.
You know,
that's cool.
I think I couldn't do it without them.
Yeah.
And their opinions and input mean a lot to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know.
Yeah.
So,
and especially, I mean, it happens with most bands as well. If you've got a certain person or a couple of guys in the band that just have a lot of content, they've got a lot of stuff that they need to get out, and the rest of the band rallies behind those two, get it out of their system and then be able to mold it and then, sure, like get the structures of the songs and the concepts all out there, and then if the other guys can sprinkle a bit on top, if appropriate, if need be, then fantastic. But it's great when you've got somebody that's got so much to put out there, and the rest of the band just goes, yeah, let's do it, we'll get behind you. And
yeah, and that's right. And and it's that little sprinkle someone might add to it that actually makes the song.
Yeah,
you go, oh shit, well, I would never have thought of that.
Yeah,
I would never have thought of it. And it's you know, there's my favorite tracks on Cohesion are Buried in a World, which is Youngie's riffs.
Yeah.
And Disrate, which is Palf's riffs, you know what I mean? So it's like, yeah, it's the give and take. And with this band, I've learnt my lessons in the past of when you were young and really ambitious and just had to make things happen, and there was rules and all this sort of shit, to just sort of back off a bit and have fun with it first. When you start, setting the bar, everyone does it. But if things start to grind down and you've still got that bar sitting there and you can't even get under it, let alone over it.
Yeah, yeah.
It becomes painful and non-productive. And
It's an interesting transition, because we've seen it in our band over the years, especially for me, because I'm 33.
Yeah.
And I joined the band when I was 20. And going from like the first several years of just, this is me, this is everything, you know, nothing else matters, relationships, work, jobs, it doesn't matter. If someone says no, then they go, and the band's everything, and that's the identity, everything, money, time, emotionally, everything's thrown into it.
Yeah.
But then as life changes and as people come and go in the band and externally as well, for a while there, the bar still remained up there, but everything else was completely different. So, same thing. We're struggling to even meet the bar, let alone go over it.
Yeah.
But now we've changed our approach, where time's not so important anymore. We'd rather wait 2 or 3 years to get an album out and do it the right way, and everyone be happy and not stressed, and actually get the most creatively out of it.
Yeah.
Than going, we need an album out in the next 6 months. We need to just try and pull something out of our ass and clash heads and get angry and get upset and just out of pure stress put this album out, when it's not the way to go anymore.
Yeah, well, essentially the essence of what you put into the album is always, every time you play it, it'll remind you of it. And it's so true. I mean, look, you know, we're all creative beings. It doesn't matter what you're doing. It might be your job. It might be hanging the clothes out.
Yep.
You know what I mean? It's, to me, okay. I'd mentioned before about negativity in music. Maybe that's what you need to get out and put into it.
Yeah.
All right? It's perfectly valid.
Yeah.
It's perfectly valid. If you listen to my back catalogue, it's never prevalent.
Yeah.
All right? The lyrical content was never like that. Mm. But there was there's a lot of negativity attached to it from what you've just said. Mm. Like, yeah, that's fucking, it's this and it's got to be here and there's there's rules. There's no room for freedom.
Yeah.
It seems counterproductive to me. It seems like the opposite of what you're trying to create. And that's where I hate business.
Yeah, of course.
As opposed to being a musician,
it's
mate.
The sort of passion of being creative and put something out that people enjoy and you enjoy, you're happy with.
Well, that's right. Yeah. When we were all around the campfire, mate, banging on drums and stuff, it was for everyone, you know what I mean? Yep. It was, and that's the way I look at music now. Yep. And I find it painful to hold on to the way we were.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Which is like album sales, touring, blah, blah, blah.
Very business.
Yeah, very business minded. And we, you know, we were always very good at that. But now it's more like, okay, so we got a European tour offer. Can everyone afford it? Oh, yeah, we all can. Okay, well, let's go do it. Oh, no. Oh, sorry, mate. You know, I've got my kid for this those 2 weeks. Yeah, okay, well, it's out the window.
Mm.
It doesn't exist.
Yeah.
10 years beforehand, that was unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
It was unacceptable.
Yeah.
And you know, is that a good thing? I don't know. Yeah.
Well, it's that whole longevity thing. Like, if that might be sustainable for a short period of time, but eventually things start to crumble. Things start to get difficult and tension builds and stress builds. And you go from a point of really being passionate and being absolutely driven and dedicated to what you do to being exhausted, emotionally drained, and not having any incentive to keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
So when you have that change where you're with a group of people that are like-minded, everyone's chilled, and everyone knows that the best way to get something great to happen is by everybody doing it on their own terms and working together, like your strengths versus somebody else's weaknesses, and everyone just working off each other and really feeding instead of this overall umbrella or this shadow that's sitting over the band where it's like, we need to do this now and we have to. There's no alternatives now or never. There's a lot of pressure there.
Yeah, and like obviously, you know, we're speaking the same language here. It's not uncommon for bands and musicians to go through this phase, and I think, you know, you do come out the other end, and I think when you do come out the other end, you can always look back and say, well, you know, it was really great what we did, you know. And for me, I'm a glass half full guy.
Yep.
I really love music and everything about it. I loved being on the road. I loved the slog. It didn't really bother me how hard it was. I was like, this is what I'm doing. You're like, I always said I was going to do it, and I'm doing it.
Yeah.
So, like I said, I tried to leave that behind, but I can't do it because there's so much enjoyment in it.
Absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely. And you can pick the good. It's like anything. You pick the good things that happened in the past, and that helps you define where you are now, and helps you progress and do more and be better and always improve. And and you learn as well. Like, you learn what went wrong and what's not quite right, and how do you do better with other people and what you're involved with, the music, your creativity. So it's that glass half full.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, I find it difficult. I respect everyone's opinion in life, but if you're gonna be in a creative situation, well, it's not that I really require it, but if I'm going to feel comfortable, I want the people around me to feel comfortable. And I want them to be excited like I am, you know.
Yeah.
So you need like-minded people that way, you know. Wow, this is really great. Oh, no, it's not fucking shit. Blah, blah, blah. This is crap. Blah, blah, blah. Not making money or, you know, don't attach that to it then.
Yeah,
don't attach that to it. So, yeah, look, it's an evolving thing, and it's great. I'm 46 this year, and it's like, fuck, have I really did this? I played my first gig when I was 14 years old, you know. I'm still doing
still
it.
Doing it. Yeah.
I guess I'm shit at golf, mate, you know. it's got to do something.
Do what you're good at.
Yeah, you know. And look, you know, people's... value success and they measure it in different ways. And I guess I measure it in the buzz you get from a show, whether there's 10 or 200 people there. You can always feel when it works.
Yeah.
You know, and it, those that 10% of shows which are great, and the 90% where you're drawing through it, that 10% makes it worth it, and you Absolutely. Keep doing it. And, you know,
even the bad shows end up over, not at that point in time, but as time progresses, they end up becoming good stories.
Oh yeah, that's,
it gives
that's
you that
right.
that colour, that flavour to the overall experience of being a musician. So when you're having chats with people and then you start reminiscing war stories,
yeah.
you talk about, like I do it all the time, I talk about the worst gigs we've ever had, and they're fantastic stories. But at the time when you're there, it's such a head fuck because you're just going, oh my god, like I don't, like should I be doing this? Yeah. Is this my life? Is this what my life's resulted to? This horrible gig where we're playing this ridiculous venue where no one's here and everything's gone wrong.
Where you have an audience, not an audience.
That's right.
There's that one guy there and he's feeling really uncomfortable.
That's right.
Because it's like, fucking hell.
He was expecting the other people to show up.
I can't go and do a pierce, otherwise I'm going to let these guys down. So right, audience, be free.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So at the time it's not pleasant, but over time they become good stories, and there's good lessons from it as well, and they're great things to tell other people later on down the track. So it's that perspective, it's that glass half full mentality again. It's taking what you can from a situation.
Hallelujah.
All right, I'll take a tangent because we're drinking beer. You're brewing beer?
I am.
Are you into it? How have you been doing
all
for long?
Grain, I've been doing it, how long have I been doing it now? So All Grain I've been probably doing 8 years now. I've got two really good recipes, three, but two of them are basically the same recipe. So I do a brilliant Hefeweizen that is on par with anything you'll get on tap here, on par with a Schafhofer or anything like that. Like, it's brilliant. And I do a berry version of that as well.
Okay.
All right. And I do a nice mild pale ale. They're my two constant recipes, which I can get right every time. I have made a Czech Pilsner perfectly once, which with the Pilsners and lagers, you need to step down the fermentation temperature over time, like 6 weeks.
Yeah. Yep. And you've got to really be on it.
I never did the science behind it. I chucked it in the rehearsal rooms and went on holidays, right, overseas, and come back, and the temperature in the room must have been the right science, and it was a brilliant brew.
Okay, But you haven't been able to match it.
I've never been able to do it again, and I just went, well, I don't like drinking shit beer, but I feel obliged to drink the beer that I've made.
Yeah, of course.
So, look, I really do like it. I'm brewing tomorrow. It'll take me 5 hours to put down 20 litres.
Yep.
I built my gear up, engineered a lot of it myself over time, and the funny thing is we got three brewers in Levhex, so it's, he does a lot of the extract and fresh wort packs. He hasn't got into the all grain, but Ben does.
Yeah.
Ben's a chef by trade, and he makes a lambic ale, which is on par. And, you know, you have to ferment that for 6 months and it gets a skin of mould on the top of it.
Yeah. Wow.
But, he's a clever brewer as well, so...
Would you guys ever think about having a Levitation X brew?
Yeah, look, we because, that seems to be the thing these days, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, you
know everybody else is doing it, but that aside...
We do it and drink it all.
Yeah. Have it available for a couple of gigs if you do. And
look, you know,
apart from that,
it's a possibility, but we're more into actually. And look, you know, I've been told that I'm a talented brewer, and I've been offered a few jobs. And I am. I like the job I do.
Yeah.
All right, like I said, I'm a fire and emergency officer and facilities manager. Come from a carpentry background, and that's fine to do the work. And I guess I've found that trying to earn money and that bar we talked about and your thresholds and stuff and turning your passions into a business is risky to me, because I want them to remain my passions, not to be something that I, oh shit, I've got to pay bills from this. Well, I better, you know, it doesn't work for me.
It becomes a chore. It becomes like this obligation that you have.
And sure, I don't mind success. I mean, if that comes along, but I don't want to put a monetary value on my art or my passions. I don't want to do it. So it's same with brewing and music. It's a process I enjoy. It's creative. It makes me feel good. And that's top notch to me. You know, it's like, for me, that's sustainable.
And you'd be able to, like, with music and beer as well, and brewing, going through that entire process from zero to the end of consumption or listening, so much satisfaction that you would have when you finally get to the end product. You got it there, and you know how much, you know, hypothetical blood, sweat, and tears you put into it to get it to that point, and you understand the value in it.
That's right. Yeah. And, you know, it's something someone might completely disagree with, you know, but I think, you know, in our backgrounds where we've seen so many great bands who fucking no one likes.
Yeah.
But you just can't get enough. You're standing in front of them going, how aren't these guys fucking Slayer? You know, how is this? I mean, how many times have you have said that in your mind? You know, like, these guys,
especially being in Australia as well.
Yeah, these guys are so on it, and it's I can feel their energy, and it's so fun. You know, to me, that's the important thing, and why I still go to gigs, and I'm the geriatric at the front headbanging like all the time. Like, it's I like to be close to a band.
Yeah,
I like to really, I feel more involved that way. You know, and look. Passion versus profit.
It's a balance. You got to find that balance.
Yeah.
And if you're happy, I think the big thing that a lot of people have a problem with is that they're not happy with whatever they're earning money, like whatever their job is.
Yeah.
So their day-to-day grind, that stereotype of working 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, working for the weekend, and that just plays on people's minds. And if they're not happy with that, it's really hard to like get any balance in your life. So I think if you can find a job, it doesn't have to be your passion. It's something that it's okay. I don't mind it. I'm good at it. And I've got good people around me. That's enough to sustain and keep you relatively balanced and be able to do the other things that you want without feeling the pressure of, well, I either do this or I've got to make money off the passionate things that I have in my life. So, you know, in your case, it'd be brewing and music, but you don't have to worry about that as much. So it takes the pressure off and you get better results out of the things that you love to do as well.
That's right, mate, because you're putting positive energy in rather than doing something because it's a necessity or it must be done.
Yep.
And I've lived long enough that I've been in both head spaces, okay, and probably driven a lot of bandmates and colleagues insane with my must do. But then again, every other member had their must do.
Yeah.
So it's nice to come out the other end.
Yeah.
Having said that, I'm not into repeating the past. It's been
you progress and
right. I can't see myself, say, for example, on stage playing Alchemist music because, I do like to listen to it every now and then, but like I said, my voice has changed, everything else has changed. It's like...
The energy would be so different.
I'm going to tarnish that memory, and that's the same... Again, I said I didn't want to speak about it. Same with Metal for the Brain. Every now and then, some schlongster approaches me with...
Schlongster?
with dollar signs in their eyes saying, oh, I'd like to chat to you about putting Metal for the Brain on again. Oh, really? Were you in the business? Were you a partner? Were you a stakeholder? Did you help build it? No. Well, why would I talk to you? Because they think that it... You know, and it's flattering.
Yeah, of course.
Because it was such a great thing.
Yeah.
But it's like... No, you can't reproduce that. It's a completely different circumstances now. Alec Hurley's dead for a start. You're not going to pull 3,000 people to a local metal show.
No, it's different.
It's different. We ended it on the largest one. I personally thought it could have gone another couple of years, but I agreed to it.
Yeah.
Now I see my position as protecting the memory.
Yeah.
All right? People still talk about it because Absolutely. It was so great.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not going to come back. And I mean, I suppose the main stakeholders, everyone in Alchemist was a stakeholder, but the main stakeholders were Rod and I, and we were handed the torch one night here in Civic by Joel and Matt Green from Armored Angel, and it wasn't a business then. We created it and did what we did. It was just such a great thing to be a part of, but things have really changed, and the younger people have something different now.
Yeah.
And they probably have something equally as great that I'm not aware of.
Yeah.
It mightn't be a concert.
Yeah.
It might be a concept altogether. You know what I mean? That's right. So it's like, okay, you know, just let it be. It was great. Be happy with that.
That's it.
I'm not into...
You can't recreate the past.
Bringing it back to pull maybe 200 to 300 people and completely tarnishing its memory.
Absolutely. Better to leave on a high and leave it where it was.
Or it could be Soundwave, mate.
Absolutely. Who knows? But it doesn't matter. Like, because we did the last one.
Yeah.
And for me, I went as a punter and I went as a band member.
Yeah.
And so I got to see both sides of it. It's fantastic. Absolutely amazing. And I hold a lot of really fond memories of that festival, and a lot of other people do. And I think that's the best thing about it, is that people can talk about it and reminisce and have great conversations about it, and awesome stories. So many stories that have come out of that. Friendships that have been built. People come from every part of the country. But it's there. That's where it is.
It was our generation, mate. And you're on the younger side of it.
Yeah.
Right? But, and I'm on the older side of it. And everything in between. But that's right. Respect it for what it was. It was great. I retain the business name simply so someone doesn't come along and try and something dodgy with it.
Yeah.
All great, you know. It took a lot of effort. I redrew on my mortgage the last 4 years to put up the startup because we would give the money away.
Yeah.
It's not a great business model.
No.
At the end of the day, that meant nothing. It was all, you know, and we couldn't have done it without the bands. Because all the bands go, we'll pay for petrol.
Yeah.
$100.
Yeah.
That started the change. Mm. We had some of the bigger drawers demanding money.
Yeah.
We gave it to them. That sort of put a bit of a bad taste in my mouth. Bands are worth money. Don't get me wrong. Bands are worth money.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
But that sort of just started to go, well, shit.
It's losing the
soul's
essence.
Dying,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, look, got out of it before it became a disaster. And for a start, there's not a venue in town here who would put it on for you now with the way things are. And for some reason, the word heavy metal is still seen as some fucking violent... Did you ever see any violence?
No, not at all. If anything, it was one of the most well-behaved events around.
My parents used to come to it, mate.
Yeah.
You know, they just couldn't believe us. Oh, these kids are great, you know. And it's like, yeah, well, they're kids, and that's what they are, mate. They're here with their mates.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's theirs as well. And so I try not to get too upset when kids go, oh, bring it back. I mean, they're not kids anymore. They're adults, and they're like, bring it back. No, it's not coming back.
No. But I think that's where people need to think forward and go, that was fantastic, but why was it fantastic? Think about the essence behind it.
Yeah.
You know, the community coming together for something bigger than them.
Yeah.
Great bands, of course. You know, think of all the mechanics behind it as well, like the location, time of year, where, like, all these different things, the whys around it. And then someone can go, you know what? We can do our own thing with a new twist and a new flavour, a new different name, and everything's completely different. And as you said, it doesn't even have to be a concert or a festival or anything like that. It could be something that no one's ever thought of before.
Yeah.
There might be some essence from that that people go, I understand why people connected with that and loved it and cherish it and have great memories of it. And I can use that part of it to create something else and create something that will be talked about in 20 years' time by the next group of people that have experienced that, who would never even hear about Metal for the Brain, and it'll just continue on. But people got to move forward. When people are stuck in the past, and it's like when all these old
member berries.
Yeah, that's right. But when you think about all these classic bands, yeah, Metallica, Slayers, and all those, and every time they release a new album or the new one's about to come out, everyone keeps saying "Return to the Roots" or it's going to sound like this album, classic album. But because people are so stuck in the past and they just want to keep reliving old memories, but no one's trying to move forward. No one's trying to listen to something with the current climate that they're in. Where's the world now? Where's everybody sitting? How old are these guys? What have they been through? Are we hearing them now as 40, 50-year-olds versus teenagers, early 20-year-old guys? It's completely different. Dynamics change. Can't
well, look,
living in the past.
That's where I have a lot of respect for Metallica, because they fucking reinvent themselves, yeah. You know, yeah, and they cop a lot of shit for it.
They do.
They cop a lot of shit, and they don't really play a lot of their new stuff in their set list, but, hey, look, what reason do they have not to be creative and try and continue to do new stuff, you know? Like, no reason whatsoever. Mm. They could put out 20 shit albums from here and in the next 10 years and they would still fill big arenas.
Absolutely.
And make good money and a good living, so they're probably looking at us like, yeah, the recording industry, whatever, we're going to write what makes us feel good, and then we're going to play the shows, because playing the old stuff still makes us feel good, yeah. But it makes the crowd feel good,
yeah.
You know, so they're able to do it. Or you could be, you know, you could be Iron Maiden, who I love, all right, but they haven't ventured very far away from the formula.
Yeah.
And good on them. Good on them, mate. I'm certainly, they're very successful, but same thing with Slayer, you know, it's like a day job.
Yeah. Big business.
Big business. Got to keep everyone paid and happy and everything rolling and all that sort of stuff. And I mean, I just thought that, you know, that this some kind of monster DVD was so brave. Yeah. Like, you know, a lot of my peers and close friends slagged the shit out of it. I'm like, man, they're just really, really showing how vulnerable they are.
Yeah.
You know.
Vulnerable with so much success. Like,
yeah.
They're in such a unique position compared to most other people out there, especially musos. And for them to get to a point where they're battling so many problems, issues that they've all individually got, and then, yeah, okay, they documented it and they're going to make money off it, but they're business people as well. And and that's part of the complexity of them individually and as a band, that they've got to try and find that balance. And at times it's chaos and it's sometimes really ugly to look at.
Oh, mate,
but they put it out there and they said, right, this is who we are. And I think they do cop a lot of shit for that, and people still refer back to it. But I think, if anything, I think their respect levels went through the roof. I think a lot of people went, you know what, this is awesome, because this is who they are. They don't have to pretend that they're this amazing band. They've just bled themselves out in front of everybody. And some people have taken advantage of it, and other people have gone, that's cool, I can identify with it, I can understand.
You know, unfortunately, we're in this world, you know, with this fucking fake money, and it's pulled out of air, and it's created out of nothing. It's, you know, and we all have to eat and live and be a part of this bullshit.
Yep.
So I don't hold that against anyone. Mm. Like, you know, I suppose comes down to some people, you know, pointing fingers at religions, especially probably because they get tax-free, but they're making profit. Well, what else are they meant to do? How are they meant to survive unless they make profit? I'm not a religious person, but I see that people don't see that. It's like, well, we're all immersed in this world, mate.
Everyone's got to make money.
Unless you want to go into a monastery and meditate and separate yourself from reality that's happening here, then you have no choice. Well, you do have a choice. And I do think things are changing in that way, where people's ideals are changing, because you're being forced to change your ideals.
Yeah.
You can either chase the imaginary money your whole life and expect that it's going to make you happy, or you can look maybe back to ancient cultures and how that wasn't their focus.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, their focus was art and living and consciousness and learning, and it's something else I'm very, very interested in, you know, ancient cultures, yeah. All right? So it's something alchemists touched on, it's something levitation hex touches on, it's an ongoing theme in my lyrical things that I can't seem to get away from, because I think, though, in the last 5 years, I've felt that things are changing. People are changing. It's not as bad as the news makes out.
Yep, absolutely, yep.
All right?
You're right,
the
yeah.
story that's being sold at you is not necessarily 100% of the truth. There's truth in it.
Yeah, of course.
But, you know, people are great. And given half the chance and out of this scenario of I have to make money, and so therefore I've got none, or I'll go and steal something. You know what I mean? It forces people, it corrals what would normally be very moral people into shit situations.
Absolutely.
And so I count myself extremely lucky, you know, and I think you create probably your own reality, but you got to have compassion for people who are maybe haven't had the same benefits I have,
yep.
you know?
Yeah, everyone's got a different sense of reality based off their environment, their upbringing, people
absolutely.
Around them. Yep.
So, I do think things are changing. I don't buy into this. I don't watch the news because I don't buy into this end of the fucking world scenario, okay? You know, civilization on this planet is a wave. It has come and gone, probably for a lot longer than we actually believe, all right? Things do change, and with the change, new things blossom.
Yeah.
So, but I really can't see this society we live in being smashed apart in our lifetime.
No.
I can't see it. There's too much love out there. There's too many people who care, you know?
That's it. And I think now it's heightened because you have social media, you have smartphones, you're so connected to information, and information's great. We've never been more knowledgeable and more aware, but at the same time, there's so much bullshit out there as well that you have to sift through. And for somebody who's not actively trying to find the truth or what is reality, they just look at whatever's the first thing to pop up in front of them. And so you got these, you know, these ridiculous headlines, and people don't click on the article and actually read what the context is. It's just the buzz headline.
Yeah.
It's all this fear-mongering sort of stuff.
Yeah, fear
and,
porn.
Yeah, and people crumble around it. So I hear it all the time, you know, especially people that probably older generation, probably both of our parents as well, that would sit down and watch the evening news and watch the crap that comes through that. And so suddenly, if I talk about going to Indonesia, or I talk about going to China or South Korea or going to Europe or whatever, it's like, ooh, you know, be careful. You just never know. Or I've heard, my parents aren't too bad, but some other people that I know, they'll warn you, and like they know what the reality is. And it's like, well, hang on, your reality is based off what's on TV. You haven't even been there. And half the time when you go to these places, you go, hang on, this person looks different. They sound different. Sometimes they don't even speak the same language, but they're exactly the same as me because they have the same necessities, the same wants.
Yeah.
They need the basics.
Yeah.
Food, shelter, water, blah, blah. But they also need recognition, connection, relationships. They need all these basic human instincts, and we're all the same. And you go to a place that's been deemed dangerous or highly volatile, and there are certain places in the world that...
Oh, it certainly happens. It certainly happens.
But a lot of places got a stigma, and you go there and you find the most amazing people there, and people just welcome you in, and they'll just drop everything for you, and you go, you know what? This completely changes your perspective as to...
Absolutely. It's like, and you hit the nail on the head. It's like, well, I think the older generation that they've become reliant on and trustworthy of media. And it's like, well, you know, I have discussions with people, and I won't say who they are, right? But it's like, oh, it's fucking... Everything's shit over there. It's all over. Everything's going to hell. It's going, wait a second. Well, take 5 seconds. How does this affect you right here in this moment?
Yeah.
How bad is your life?
Absolutely.
It's really actually great. Yeah. And that is horrible news. But if you make that part of your reality, you're actually going to draw that towards you, because you're going to be worried, you're going to be bitter, you're going to, from bitterness and worry and fear comes hatred, and you know,
you push it onto everyone that's in your area, in your circle.
It's also a very easy way to corral people, like, fuck, yep. Well, you know, gotta. So, you know, I don't really listen to mainstream news. I don't, news is really not where I gather my information. It's from people and their experiences, like you've just said, overseas. So how did you find it? Oh, well, this is great. You've been there and you know, and yeah, there are bad things happening in the world, but from some people's perspective, everything outside of this fantastic island we live on is dangerous and horrible and shit, but like, no.
We can flip it the other way as well. Yeah. We speak to Americans, and I know a lot of great American friends, and they'll say, I'd love to come to Australia, but I don't know. I don't know if I'll ever will. And you're like, why? Money? Time? And they're like, no, I don't want to get bitten by a snake or a spider.
That's right, spider.
And he's going...
Or eaten by a shark at Bondi.
Yeah,
you know.
And you joke and you think it's funny, but then there's this underlying reality that they have, that they actually genuinely feel a little bit worried and vulnerable if they were to venture over. And they think they're going to come in contact with some of these things. And you go, yeah, they're here, but you've got to search for them. You've got to be in a place where they're around, but you can walk into a room and, you know, you're not gonna come face to face with a dangerous animal.
Yeah, man, we have this creature. Civilization that's pretty much the same everywhere, you
exactly.
know, and it's
exactly.
like, yeah, it's an odd thing, and I find it really interesting. And I guess, you know, I've always been able to sort of step back a bit, and I think musicians are great at doing this, and artists in general, of stepping back and actually observing what's in front of them and painting that picture.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a given, you know, every artist has their different take on things, and some are, like I said before, I'm very into this negative portrayal, which I can't get into. I'm a huge black metal fan, but I find it comical to concentrate on darkness and all this sort of shit. Yeah, sure, maybe that needs to be expressed to get it out there, and then it's off your chest. I understand that too. I mean, I love Darkthrone.
Yeah.
They've got some really dark, cheesy heavy metal, which I just love, find so enjoyable,
and
you know?
Fenris is just like the most comical guy.
Yeah, he's just a comical guy, you know? And it's like, yeah, look, you know, it's the guys creating this, they're not serious. Well, they are serious about their art, but they're not...
But they don't take themselves seriously.
That's right. They're not here going, well, I have to go and do my satanic ritual this afternoon and I hate the world and all this sort of shit. And I'm sure that exists, but like I said, it's never been a part of what I look. It's like, well, if I was to write and jump on this bandwagon and write gore and blood and all this sort of stuff, how true of an expression of me is that? Well, the fact is that, well, it wouldn't be true, because my life's pretty bloody good.
Hmm.
Where I just... Yeah, do I have everything I desired? No. Do I have anything I need? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, everything I need, man.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's like, well, that's not what I want to put out there.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What's your intention?
Yeah.
If you want to project who you are...
Yeah.
That's one thing. And then other people are storytellers. And then... Like, Slayer's a good thing, like, good example. Like, Tom Araya is, like, this Christian. And,
yeah.
And their lyric content is so extreme. But he said, we're telling stories. And that's
Yeah, that's right.
You know,
that's a healthy perspective to have.
And that's... Yeah. And they've got the clear separation. But it's like, I grew up in Brisbane, and in a period where black and death metal was really strong.
Yeah.
Some amazing bands that have come out of Brisbane over the years. But
right. Too right.
Yeah. There's some certain guys who played in bands... And that persona that was on stage came off the stage and they kept it up. And look, that might just be them. They might be just unhappy, angry people because of a whole range of things in their life. And it's still genuine. But you look at it and go, man, like, how do you maintain this? How do you maintain so much negativity and, you know, headbutting people and pouring beer on people and slagging people off and being racist or whatever, just to try and... Sometimes it feels like they're trying to uphold the reputation of what the band represents. And and that was a real turn off for me, because I would go to these shows and really young and just go, this is amazing, riffs are amazing, the sound's great,
yeah, yeah, so that's
tense
right.
and heavy and memorable parts of the music, and then I'd go up to these guys and try and shake their hand and they're just cunts, and you just go, wow, like, is this okay, so is this what like black or death metal is meant to be? Is it meant to be a bunch of assholes? But then after, over the time when I grew up and started to hang out with more bands, I realized no, there's like a large amount, actually probably the majority, that are actually really cool dudes, and they just love the music, and they love the essence behind it, and they're actually good dudes, and they treat people with respect. It's just that small percentage.
It is that small percentage. It's, I guess they just have a loud voice, you know?
Yeah.
And it's...
There's an ego thing as well.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, look, there always is, isn't it? I don't think, you know, we've all suffered from that at some stage,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't serve much purpose. You do have to stand your ground as far as the business goes. There's a lot of shonky people out there in the business, yep. as you know, and yep. But there is a lot of great people. And yeah, we just do what we got to do, mate.
Absolutely. Well, we'll wrap it up in a sec, yeah, and we'll have another beer.
Yeah.
I should hurry up and finish mine.
No,
before
you're
we
right,
wrap
mate.
It up,
yeah.
really quickly, so... You're doing a couple of other things at the moment, musically?
Yeah, look, I've been in a Turbo Negro tribute band called Turbo Belco for probably 4 or 5 years now, and we've had a bit of a break now, but we've travelled around the country, you know, doing shows, and it's a really funny, it's a hilarious thing because the fan base that the Turbo Jug End is bigger than the band itself, and it's really odd, and I've always, cool. like, enjoyed the rock and roll, so it's great, but I've got... rehearsals tonight for a sort of 70s styled space rock band called Pilots of Baalbek, and my wife Mel is in the band. She has played in a band since Pod People.
Yeah, okay.
So it's great, and her sister on bass, and trying out a couple of drummers. The vocalist Hayden Jenkins from Turbo Negro is in it as well, and it's a Hawkwind style UFO-y, spacey sounding
kind of thing. Psychedelics.
Yeah, 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 yeah. But, cool. you know, it's great to be able to do it and get my Les Paul out and have
nice.
A go.
Yeah,
like
cool.
I said, it's a very creative period of time for me. The last 12 months, I've never been this creative.
It's good. Milk it.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. It's just, I've got great facilities. I'm down there, you know, a couple of nights a week and on the weekends and... trying to find the balance between that and brewing, and I think it's finding the balances which has enabled me to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas when I was a younger man, I'd be going, I'm doing this.
That's it. All in.
And I'll be up until 2 a.m. and I'll get up and go to work and do all that shit just to get it all done. But
yeah.
You know what I mean, mate? So yeah, great times around great people. Great to meet you here today, mate. And,
absolutely.
And you know, have what I would say is a very intelligent chat about great things in life.
Sounds good. I love it. I think it's a great way to wrap it up. Let's have another beer.
Yeah, mate.
And thank you.
No worries, Andy.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, everyone. If you want to reach out to Adam, you can go over to the show notes at andysocial.net. I'm going to put all the links to everything we spoke about probably would be a better word, Andy. So you can go over there and check out all those details that we spoke about on this episode. Now, before I wrap things up, and I do have my little housekeeping, my usual spiels that I crap on about, but I'm trying to help you guys a little bit. Now, I did a shout out on Facebook the other day about reviews on iTunes. Now, I know a lot of you don't listen to the podcast on iTunes, but for those that do, iTunes is a big, big help for this podcast if you rate and review. Now, I don't expect you guys to do something for nothing. And I have said to people on Facebook that if you do leave a review, please plug your project, your band, your business, or whatever the hell you want to plug, even if it's just you, yourself, and I will rattle off the reviews that I get each week on the podcast. Now, I do get a few listeners from all across the world, mainly Australia, but a large chunk from Japan, Germany, the US, UK, New Zealand, and a whole range of other places. Actually, Norway is pretty high up as well. So if you want me to plug anything that you're involved with, please leave me a review and a rating on the podcast app for iTunes for this podcast. And I guess if you leave reviews anywhere else on the internet, let me know. Let me understand where they are, and then I'll rattle them off on this podcast as well. But I want to help you guys because you guys are helping me. So I haven't really done this on the podcast so far. It's been, you know, almost 2 years of this podcast running. So I don't know how many of these reviews I should read out, but there's not a lot, to be honest. I'm not going to inflate my ego. Now, I've got one from my now wife, Jess, which I won't read out because it's very cheesy. Sorry, Jess. But I've also got, what do we got? Awesome new podcast by Andy Darlow, which is Andy Darlington of Necrology, death metal band from the Central Coast in Australia. So there you go. Plug for you, Andy. Anyone out there that has not heard anything from the Andy Social podcast or who were thinking about starting to listen to it, do yourself a favor and do. It is an excellent example of interesting topics, interviews, and generalized ramblings from the man, Mr. Dowling himself. So to everyone out there, don't put it off. It's certainly worth your time. And there's a little metal horns. Thanks, Andy. We've got Andy delivers a great and diverse take on many topics. Well worth listening to. Always entertaining. From shockme.au. Thank you. Toad's Angst has written a paragraph. Well, actually, three paragraphs of stuff here. So I have the attention span of a teenage girl, so my complete truthful recommendation would be that I personally only subscribe to three podcasts, and this is one of those three. That should be reason enough to subscribe. You can read the rest on the reviews. Anyway, moving along, Adam Bark. Now, Adam was the previous fill-in drummer for Lord. Thanks, Adam. This is over a year ago. You're probably not even listening anymore, but Andy's a top bloke and delivers a consistently great podcast with interesting guests and topics. Highly recommended giving this a listen. Eddie71 has said, a podcast for everyone. It's like sitting in on a chat between mates at your local, entertaining, informative, and funny as hell in parts. Subscribe and you'll be pleasantly surprised. Yeah, surprised, I think I was. Don't worry, the slurring wasn't in that review. It was coming out of my mouth. Mark 1234321 has said, not a huge fan of podcasts, but happened upon this bloke's episode, Get Your Lingo On, inspired me to focus on my efforts on learning a new language, and I'm currently a couple of weeks into learning Italian and enjoying it immensely, which I may not have done if not for some of the media this guy provides on the Facebook page for his podcast. Now, it's going back a while. But Lingo is Duolingo. So if you want to check out an old episode of this podcast, you can hear me ramble on about learning a new language. It's very informative, according to Mark 1234321. Moving along, I have Thump Music. Mark, thank you. Mark's written very quickly, I highly recommend Andy's podcast. Totally enjoy the diversity and topics he offers and professionalism. I have had a few beers. He holds whilst interviewing some interesting people from many areas of the music industry and life in general, et cetera, et cetera. Keep up the good work, Andy. Thank you, my friend. Lisette C said, it's like sitting in a pub with Andy. Andy's a Richard Fiddler of metal. Definitely have a listen if you enjoy listening and a laid-back convo. Paulie Derrick had said, one of my faves, subbed, so good, thanks, Andy. Camo Von Trappington has said, really good listen, well-produced chats with people you wouldn't necessarily hear anywhere else. Mega Crushface has said, Andy is an absolute king. All of his podcasts are on point and a pleasure to listen to. Get on it, people. And Mr. Cabba. Now, Cabba and Ash from Claim the Throne, Blodgecast, and Cabba's also got a podcast called Band Tools. So if you're in a band and you want some awesome DIY insights, some really cool behind-the-scenes tips and tricks, go and check out Band Tools. That's on iTunes and Stitcher and all the podcast platforms. So check that out. Now, Cabba's said, consistently, he hasn't slurred, this is me, consistently finds interesting guests from all sorts of places, travels, drinks, and talks. Keep it up, Andy. Yeah, definitely drink. So thank you very much. Now, that's all the reviews I have so far. But if you want to leave a review, please plug what you're into, what you're doing, and I'll definitely make a mention on this podcast. They won't be as long as this particular outro because I had to play catch up. But moving forward, hopefully I can add a review or two to each week's episode. So thank you very much. My podcast downloads are climbing month by month. I haven't trended down yet. So much from Japan. I have no idea what's going on. If somebody can fill me in, actually, you from Japan, if you're listening to this, please tell me how the hell you found out about this podcast. Where did you find out about this podcast? Please message me and tell me, because I'm very, very intrigued. Anyway, on that note, I've been rambling on way too much. I've got another podcast coming out next week, my last from my little trip out to Canberra. More stuff coming soon, heaps of exciting guests. Thank you very much for listening. Goodbye. You're